Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we're coming back at you again. Corey, I am tired and old, maybe.
Well, sort of.
I've been doing so many things over the last few days that at this point, my body just feels like it's self-gooifying and about to collapse in on itself like a dying star. And it's fun. It is just life. It feels like sometimes.
You should pull a sickie tomorrow. You should just be like, 3-day weekend for me. I've earned it.
Yeah. It'd be nice. I just need I told my wife earlier, I was like, I need just the biggest dude to give me just the worst massage ever. The one that hurts so bad that I just stop feeling anymore.
Yeah.
That's what I need because I just, so many parts
I'm
of my
sure
body
you
hurts.
Can find that somewhere.
Yeah. I'm sure I could. We've had so much, it's been work's been busy and then I'll work 8 hours. And then the second that I'm done, it's let's pop over here and start doing work outside, physical manual labor outside until it gets dark. And then I shower and lay down and eventually pass out on the couch and wake up and then do it all over again for the last week. And it's been
Sounds
a whole
lovely.
Lot. Yeah. But Corey, how are you?
I am good. My MRI that I was supposed to have last week got moved to tomorrow morning, which is nice. They called and they're like, we can get you in late April. How does that sound? And I'm like, that sounds awful. No, I don't put that down for me. And I called my orthopedic and he was like, what the heck? No, I can get you in here Monday morning 8. Does that work? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, all right, I'll see you then. So that was almost a fit of rage for me of I'm going to go 6 weeks not knowing what's wrong with this. I really need to know what's wrong with my knee. That way I can know what to do next because I'm kind of tired of being gimp. But other than that, pretty good, pretty busy week as well, but more just extracurricular activities and being social than anything. So
yeah,
it's not the worst thing, but it's definitely I need to recharge my battery with a couple of just quiet days.
Yeah, I get that. It's one of those things where especially depending on the type of person you are, it can really boost you up or, really pull you down. And that's the thing is sometimes I'll every few months I'll get into a place where it's I could go a couple of days where I'm really interacting with people. And then for the next couple of months, I want none of that anymore. And until it just kind of comes back to me again out of the blue, weirdly. But yeah, Corey, you should be using some of your time to play games, to recharge yourself
by way of doing that.
True. Yeah, you
but
have.
But I have been playing games.
Yeah. You've also been playing games. I've been playing games. We got games to talk about. This is Arcade Cozy, where we talk about games. It is what it is, which is what we're going to do today. We're going to start off top end. Talk about there was a Zelda Direct, 10-minute thing that you kind of went in. We're like, what are they really going to show here? And they showed some stuff. After that, Corey, talk about what we've been playing. You've been playing some stuff. It might be surprising. I've been playing some stuff. Who knows if it's surprising? But we'll dig into it. Corey, do you want to lead us out the gate? Tell us about the Zelda Direct. I want you to paint me a word picture that takes me into this. Start with Aonuma's gray silver fox exterior and then draw me in.
What? I missed whatever the first part. Anyway, Tears of the Kingdom. So yeah, they showed off the trailer, and this feels so odd for such a huge, huge title to be coming in, and we've seen nothing. We've seen like 2 30-second clips from this game that's been announced years ago. And here we are, 4 weeks from release. Like, here's a quick little 10-minute clip. No story, no nothing. It's full on. They show Link. Just judging by it, you look a little ways into the game. I think they have 5 hearts. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, you've done a little, your ways in. It's Link in his green tunic, odd thing going on with his hand. Get up. Where he's being taken over by Ganon is my prediction. And the prediction is that Link is Ganon. But moving on from there, actually my prediction is that Link is dead and you're playing as Zelda. Anyway, what? Moving on, is Tears of the Kingdom. Link dies. These are his tears. Here's my supporting documentation. Throughout this 10-minute clip, they show off all these new abilities that you can do that are absolutely crazy and feel like they are justifying all these random. In Breath of the Wild, the game was littered with random items, monster parts you'd pick up from killing enemies, bones, weapons, XYZ, you name it. And it was mainly used for cooking, which I think was very fun, but also a mixed concept in Breath of the Wild because you never really knew what you would get in that when you cook something. And they've implemented this new idea of fuse, where you can fuse all these different parts of the world together to create something new. So this is kind of one of the first things they're showing off, where they're doubling, tripling down on weapon degradation, mm-hmm. In Tears of the Kingdom. So your weapons are going to deteriorate just like they did before. But you can take a stick now and you can fuse it with a boulder, and now it can last a little bit longer and it does a little bit more damage. Or you can take the stick and combine it with a pitchfork, and now you have a 14-foot, pole vault, essentially. But yeah, and so that's kind of the initial part. They're just showing off all the new, this new toolkit that you will have as Link / maybe Zelda. For Tears of the Kingdom. Well, I mean, we're going to talk about more, but that's just the concept of this 10 minutes is like, here's what you're going to be doing on your grand adventure through Hyrule this time around. Here are the tools you have at your disposal. And I think that was a very good idea from them. Like, we're holding back story stuff. They're keeping a lot of things close to their chest. I think it's very just like, here's some fun little toys.
Yeah, it's so, I will say legitimately, like, this got me more excited about Tears of the Kingdom than I think I have been since the first trailer, like teaser trailer that they showed like 3 years ago. And the reason being, like, like you said at the start, we haven't really heard much of anything. Like, the only thing that we're going off of in most cases is just kind of the hype of knowing, okay, this is going to be more Breath of the Wild, but to what extent, how much of it is going to be very similar, how much is going to be different, is it going to really feel like a step toward a 2, or is it going to feel like a glorified expansion in a way, right? Like, what is this going to look like? And yeah, I mean, very much out of the gate, it kind of seems, for the first couple of minutes of this trailer, it does just kind of seem like Breath of the Wild. Like, everything is, you're riding on the horse. The graphics, UI, so much of it looks very similar.
Not one for one.
Right. And part of that's due to the fact that you're still in Hyrule. This is like, even though stuff has changed, you're still in Hyrule, so there's going to be a lot that's very similar, if not the same, I would imagine. And it comes down to like the stuff that they're adding into it. And I think that the big thing that they're doing that honestly, like, I think is incredibly smart is the fact that they're doubling down on the stuff that made Breath of the Wild unique, which was its, like, the physics, like, systematic, like, just kind of emergent gameplay type of stuff that it had going on, where it was like, Breath of the Wild lived on for years after the fact because people would come up all these crazy things that they would do, like all these trick shots and all of this like weird stuff. And it was like, it was designed this way to have this sort of element to it. And even though, like, even with me, like, even though that wasn't the type of player that I was, I still had a number of those stories and a number of those experiences where it felt like the game was so rich and open in all of these ways due to what it was doing. And it feels like they've leaned into that so hard to the point where, like you said, like, okay, rather than people had all of these issues with weapons breaking, I had issues with that. I mean, it didn't bother me so much, but it was a thing where like you would feel like you never wanted to use a weapon because I was like, well, it's going to break. Like I've only found like two of these in my entire 50 hours of playing the game. I don't want to use it.
You're avoiding combat because you don't want to break something else, then be forced to use it.
Right. And the fact that they go into it and that being like one of the big things is, okay, here's this fuse ability. And yeah, it's going to have other uses, but like its big thing is, look, you find a stick, take it, grab a rock, attach it to the stick. Now you got a hammer. And it's like,
yeah,
they're taking it to this place where it's like, okay, like, yeah, I'm sure they're going to be like super cool, just out of the box weapons. But it's also taking this approach where it's like, you're also never going to be without a weapon. Literally, yeah. You'll find a stick, you'll find some rocks, you'll find something that you can fashion into like a really cool, dope weapon that's going to get you through what you need. And that is like the fact that they're going that direction, that they really are building into it where it's like, okay, we are going to make this, we're going to exponentially increase the amount of wacky stuff you can do and really just make this almost kind of like a playground in a way. Yep. I think that's one of the strong suits of Breath of the Wild. And I'm really happy like watching through it, seeing how they, cause they had that. They also had their ultra hand ability, which is like a big old like fusing objects to make things like cars and boats and stuff like that. Like again, people were already kind of doing that in Breath of the Wild where it's like, okay, I'm gonna like freeze this thing. I'm gonna hit it a bunch of times and I'm gonna hop on top of this rock and I'm gonna launch it into the distance. Yep. And I'm sure there's still gonna be stuff like that you can do, but it's like, okay, well, what if we gave you the tools to be able to like build that transportation organically without you having to like just do that in the weirdest way possible? Like, what if we actually gave you some of those tools? And just like the fact that they're doing all of this, I think is great. I'm loving the fact that they're leaning into it. And also just the tone with Aonuma at the start, where he's very much just kind of like, I'm going to show you some stuff. And if you were watching that and you were like, but I wonder if you can do this, his answer just being like, yeah, probably. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I think it's great.
I agree. I love it. It feels like they've watched like hours on hours of people breaking Breath of the Wild, quote unquote, like doing as many of the wackiest things they had possible that way. And they're like, okay, let's make this simple for them and let them just, it's a playground. I think that's what you said. And like, we're going to let people have the most fun they possibly can. Honestly, just breaking this game. And here's all of the tools. Here's every way that you can do it. Knock yourself out. And you're going to see them. They're going to be watching, people now do this for the next several years. So where they're like, I'm going to make a rocket ship. And I'm going to somehow find my way off of this world. Kind of a thing where it's just, I love it. Like you said, they're leaning into it. It looks so fun. I appreciate what they showed off is like, here's just a small sample of some of the things you'll be able to do. They're not even showing off the entire new skill set that's there. Trying to think, a couple of the other things are you can reverse time on objects. That's how you get to the sky islands that they've shown off in the world where there's floating islands in the sky. You can, I can't remember what it was called, but you can essentially like teleport through any surface that has a ceiling as long as there is an underspace to it. So that makes going through a mountain so much simpler if it has like a cave in it or something like that.
It's called Ascend.
Ascend. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just I think they heard like, okay, people like the climbing in the game, but they also hate a little bit of the climbing in the game. Like, here's, you can still climb, go be, you know, you're free climber. But also, if you don't want to deal with that, here's an easy way to just get up this mountain or through this temple or XYZ.
Well, and that, because that was a big part of it, was there were a lot of times where it'd be like, man, I need to look out over this thing. So I got to spend the next like 5 to 10 minutes climbing this mountain to get up to the top so that I can then jump over here. And the fact that they are putting it that way, where it's like, okay, a rock falls off a sky island, you can recall it back up to the thing. You don't have to worry about finding some other kind of path. If there's a cave to this mountain, just ascend all the way up, become your little water droplet self and squeeze through those cracks and go all the way to the top. Don't even have to worry about
climb it. If you want to climb it, you can climb it. By all means, do it. But
and I'm sure there will also be like landmarks and things that have no, like that's not an option, you know, like there's no cave, there's no whatever, like they'll still keep some of those things. But I think by and large, they're trying to streamline, they're trying to give you the fun as frictionlessly as possible. And I think it's also probably because they have other big plans involved that they're like, we don't want this to slow you down. We don't want this to like, we want you to be able to explore the land, get back up to the islands as quickly as possible. We don't want you to have to like be slogging through all this stuff, clicking through menus. We just want you to have that experience. So let's let you have it. And that is, it's wonderful that they're going that direction.
Now, here's my question for you.
Yes.
Do you think we play as Link in this game?
Have this we not just, had this conversation?
We have. So here is Corey Thrasher's TED Talk of why we are not playing as Link in this game. Because, like we said, it's the same world. It's the same, like, you know, it's a sequel, direct sequel, XYZ, you name it. Everything they showed off is a whole new skill set. And I'm like, the reason they're showing this off is because this is Zelda's skill set. These are her abilities. These aren't Link's, because Link has all of his other stuff. That Link's dead. Link dies. This is my full like tin pot fan theory of like, that's why they showed off all these different things. And they're kind of teloing us and like putting in a Link model for all of this. Just my crackpot tin theory.
Yeah.
We have had this conversation before. It doesn't have to be super deep.
Well, I mean, I didn't mean it that way. I just meant like I couldn't remember, because I have had this conversation like with a couple other people before. And then also just in my own mind, like I've had this conversation. I mean, my thinking is like, I think like what you're seeing is Link. I think all of that. I don't think they're like doing some weird trickery there. Now, whenever they first started like digging into trailers, there was a lot of speculation that it's like, oh, you know, you're not seeing his face. There's a lot of evidence that maybe that is like original Ganon, like you know, that you are actually playing in the past. And maybe, I mean, I feel like less of that now, just the fact that you are seeing Link. I think it's more just kind of like he's a little wizened and he's like been through some stuff and he's not like keeping it together potentially. I do think that there's some kind of like, I do think something's going to happen. Okay. Whether it is like they do a Link to the Past kind of thing where you have like a whole other world and that is like Zelda's thing, you know, because I mean, they're like in the trailers, like Zelda's featured prominently, but she also kind of like falls into this abyss. And what if she like falls into another world? And like, and there's this kind of like this duology there where like she's in another version of Hyrule and having this kind of her own experience. It's also possible that maybe like Link does legitimately, like maybe his arm, maybe it's like a Red Dead Redemption type thing. Yeah. Not like huge spoilers, but maybe it's this kind of thing where it's like you play as Link, but eventually you don't anymore. And and then you play as Zelda for the rest. Like, who? Maybe. I mean, I think I would. If it were any other developer, I would be like, yeah, just like rumors to the wind. Like, it could be anything. Yep. Nintendo's so conservative. The fact that they haven't like made Zelda a playable character before now, like, makes me a little bit more like trepidatious to just be like outright, yes, this is going to be a thing. But I think there is a reason they haven't set it up in a bigger way to at least like feature something, because they were very close. They were very closely guarded about the name with Breath of the Wild. Like, I can't remember how much they showed prior, and granted, Breath of the Wild was also like being hyped up simultaneously with the release of the Switch.
Yeah.
But I feel like you got glimpses of like the champions and some of these other like fixtures of that world and what was happening. And the fact that we don't have any context of that, like, I do think there is something going on. I think that who we're seeing in the trailer is Link. But I do think there's going to be some sort of, like, you know, naughty business that happens at some point. What exactly? Who knows? I mean, I think it's really difficult to guess with a Nintendo because they're not exactly the most, like, readable in that way. But yeah, I mean, I think there's something that's going to happen. And I think it does involve Zelda. Like, I think they're... I think if any game is going to have a Zelda protagonist or some sort of Zelda sequence of something, it's going to be this one, just given how much they've like put Zelda into their trailers and into featuring this, given the fact they haven't really featured anything else. So,
yeah, it's just, again, so odd that we literally know nothing a month before release. I think it's incredibly exciting. They don't really have to market this game at all because of how big Breath of the Wild was, but it's kind of odd. I enjoy it though.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. Cannot wait. It's April now. Game comes out in May. So yeah, get every game that you think you might like wrapped up beforehand, because it'll ruin everything for you. From here on out, forever. Just be ready. Corey, have you actually been playing games or just watching games? Oh, also, before I do, I mean, there's not like a ton of news, but I do want to just mention this because I read it and it seemed funny to me. Do you remember the game that was shown? I think it was the VGAs, but the Crime Boss Rocket City thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was shown, that had like the big thing was Chuck Norris coming in, but like Vanilla Ice is in it.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So reviews have dropped on it, and it came out. I don't know if it's out. When does it come out? Releases. Yeah, it released on the 28th of March. So it's out. And I don't think anybody was like thinking it would be exciting, but the fact that just Game Informer, for instance, you know, just for reference, Hogwarts Legacy gave it a 9. Resident Evil 4 Remake gave it a 9.5. Destiny 2 Lightfall, 7.75. The Crime Boss Rocket City, they gave a 3.
Yikes. This bad.
Yeah, the Metacritic really on Rocket City. I mean, I wasn't interested in it regardless, but the Metacritic on Rocket City is bum ba da bum a 48.
That's really bad.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah.
There's not much more I can say to it other than yikes.
Yeah, I mean, even the best, like, the best review on here is if you're looking for something similar to Payday 2, as a similar shooting experience to a GTA-style metropolitan setting with micromanagement, Crime Boss Rock City might give you some satisfaction.
Might give you some satisfaction.
If you like Payday 2 and you want something kind of similar, you might like this.
Yeah. purchase at your own risk.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know who this was for. Like, I mean, even whenever people it was shown like off, I don't really know. Yeah. I mean,
maybe.
But also just kind of like it seemed very out of touch, even from the trailer or even from the announcement, because they rolled these guys out on stage and they were like hyping it up like this is going to be the next big thing. But they also like put, I mean, it felt like it was should have been shown off 15 years ago, because it ends the trailer with like, oh yeah, and also we got Chuck Norris. And it's like, okay.
Man, Chuck Norris as a joke has been dead for like 10 years. It's still kind of funny every now and then, but I mean this in the kindest way.
Chuck Norris. Yeah. I mean, if he was put in there, like if he was just in there and it was like, wait a second, is that Chuck Norris? Like that would be kind of funny. But the fact that it's like, we're going to highlight it like, oh yeah.
We get Chuck Norris and it's like, and is that your whole thing?
Yeah. Apparently it's only, I don't know what his full price is, but apparently it's down to like $32.
Checks out. When you get reviews that low, they're like, many people buy this.
Yeah, you can get it for kind of, I mean, cheap quotes. But yeah, it's fun. We have fun.
Yeah.
Not every game can be Tears of the Kingdom. Who knows?
No.
Tears of the Kingdom could get a 3. I don't know.
Unlikely, but maybe.
Yeah. Who knows? But Corey, I assume you haven't been playing Crime Boss Rock City. What have you been playing?
Sadly, no. Well, I forgot to mention this when we were talking ahead of time, but I have been playing a game, and I've been playing a lot of a game. And it's Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah, boy.
It hooks on me this past week. And for anyone who's played, I mean, you know as well. So I was at Kanji's Dungeon. I call them palaces because that's my headspace with Persona and Persona 5. I was in the middle of that. Well, now I have finished Kanji's Palace, Risei's Palace, who's next, the Void Quest Dungeon, which comes after that, Summer, all that. I'm back in school. I'm about to go to this island for a class trip. And so I put in like a, what is that? Probably a good like 25 hours this week, if not more, I would say. I'm loving it. I don't have the same love as I have for Persona 5. I hold Persona 5 as like a god tier game. But it's finally really clicked for me. I appreciate, the biggest thing I appreciate between Persona 4 Golden and Persona 5/Royal is in Persona 5 you play as Ren or whatever the canon name is. You play as Joker. And with the Phantom Thieves, everyone feels like Joker's friend. No one else really feels like friends other than Ryuji and On, sort of. You are the main through line. You just feel like friends with everyone, and they all hang out with you because you exist. While in Persona 4 Golden as Hero, or I believe that's his canon name, or Leader, as they call you within the investigation team, everyone feels like friends. Like Yukihiro Chie, Yosuke, Chie, and all of them. Kanji comes in, Risei comes in. Everyone feels like, oh no, this is a group of friends. And when I'm not hanging out with them, they are hanging out with each other. And that is further emphasized with the Marie S-Link, where you'll be hanging out with her, and then it'll be like Chie and Yukiko come up, or like Kanji and Risei will come and hang out with you, so on and so forth. And it's like, okay, they have lives outside of me. And I think that further intensifies the dynamic when you're working together with them. Like there's moments where like Yusuke will call you And then you'll hang up and Chie will call and she's like, I'm trying to call Yusuke, but I guess he was on the phone with you. And it's like, there's acknowledgement of each other's existences. While in five, I don't feel like that happens all that much.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that. And just this whole idea of the investigation team trying to solve these murders and like working together in the small town. And it's just so good. I find it very heartwarming at times. I do have some complaints with it. I'll get to those in just a second. But all around, it's just a more wholesome experience, I think, because everyone's just trying to figure out who am I? Like, what's the best version of me? Is like, do I need to have a best version of me? Why can't I just I can act different in different scenarios. Like that's okay. That isn't like going against my grain. Like, there's nothing wrong with me being like a happy-go-lucky person with like this group of friends, but a little bit more like quieter when I'm hanging out with this person, so on and so forth. It's like just learning to be true to yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, I just love it. It's so good. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very, it's much more like rural and slow-paced, mm-hmm. and slow-paced, quote unquote, like in comparison to Persona 5, because Persona 5 is like, you're in Tokyo, it's this big, and the plot is also much, not that, you know, people are dying in Persona 4 and like there's big grand scales, but it's like Persona 5 is legitimately like the world's gonna end. And in Persona 4, it's like, it's less of that. It's more kind of like, you know, more confined to that town in particular, to Inaba. And so it does have a much more like tight kind of feel and much more like, everybody feels closer and everybody feels more connected in a lot of ways. And yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good kind of point about it, is that it does. And I think that can be, I mean, you and I both have the perspective having come from Persona 5 first, I think that really cemented it as being like our favorite out of the two. But it was a thing going in Persona 4 where it felt like a different experience. It didn't like it didn't feel like Persona 5 was this like rehash of what was happening. It felt like a very different kind of thing. In a similar way, I mean, granted, this may sound like very white American of me, but like, you know, when Terrace House was on, and I was watching Terrace House on Netflix, it was a thing where, you know, every season felt super unique. Even though it was still the same concept, where it was like, okay, it's, you know, Japanese speaking, you know, people, Japanese like civilians, potentially like people who have kind of a mixed heritage or things like that. But every season was designed to be very different, where it's like, okay, we're in Tokyo. Now we're in Hawaii. Now we're and they're also navigating different things. Now we're in Hawaii. Okay. Some of these people don't speak English. How are they navigating some of that? Now we're in rural Japan. Now we're in this kind of, you know, and stuff like, and again, like that's a very narrow perspective that I have, but like, it's that same kind of thing where like I went into each of those experiences being like, this almost kind of feels like its own show. Like, it doesn't feel like it's a second season. It feels like it's its own thing. And it feels like Persona has kind of the same thing where it's like, by going to these different areas and having this different kind of like scope, it makes it feel a whole lot more unique than it may otherwise. So.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, five is this big grandiose, you were as the Phantom Thieves, like choosing your next target to pull off this heist to steal their heart. And it's like big, bombastic, it's loud. The idea is, you know, rebellion and going against the grain. And this is just softer. Quieter. Yes, it deals with very heavy themes, but it's just is more personal. It's so good. My biggest gripe with it is the Persona games, not only are these dungeon crawlers, JRPGs, that also do like social links where you're growing relationships with people. It is like a dating sim at times as well. And so there's like romantic elements to the games and like the other characters Like, you can build, like, a romantic relationship with them. It's nothing, like, rated R or anything like that. It's very, like, mellowed down, but it just acknowledges it. In 5 specifically, I will say that nothing's really... My complaint of 4 is it's very pervy. Like, it's just very pervy with a lot of, like, some of the male characters, mainly the male mascot of Teddy in 5, and it's just so uncomfortable. I know it was made at a time where in games that was just much more of the norm, but there's just so many lines of dialogue where I'm like, I'm just uncomfortable. I don't find this funny. It's not good. And then there's also moments with how they handle, without going into a lot of spoilers, but like Kanji's, how essentially his like sexuality is very, he's hinted at being gay or maybe bisexual. It's where I'm at. It hasn't really like defined it. And the way that they write the other male characters around him is just so messed up and so just an awful way of, you know, thinking. And I understand it was kind of the norm, you know, the time, which doesn't make it good, but I understand, like, this is, like, was what was just commonplace in a lot of games. Don't love that. Makes me love Kanji as a character all that much more, because I'm just rooting for him all the time of, like, screw what they said. I don't care. No, move on past that, Kanji. We're doing this. We're doing our thing. Be yourself. Love him. I'm Team Kanji till I die. But yeah, there's just like these smaller elements in the game where I'm just like, oh, that's just, I did not like that at all. Can we please move past it? And so that, I would say that's my just kind of biggest complaint of 4 so far, is it's just so pervy. It's so uncomfortable at times.
Yeah. And that's part of, not just Persona, I guess. I mean, it's a thing if you watch anime, have any sort of like relationship to, like Japanese media, there's going to be some of that.
Nowhere that bad.
Yeah. I mean, 5 didn't feature any of that in like core storylines, I guess, is kind of like, I mean, they had their controversy with some of, like, there were a couple of like homophobic, I guess, kind of things that were called out that weren't great. But yeah, I mean, Persona 4 features more of that, like, front and center with characters like Kanji. Have you gotten to any of like Naoto's stuff yet?
Not yet, no. Okay. The boy/ I'm pretty sure it's a girl detective, and everyone's just like, oh, they're a boy. I'm like, I think pretty sure that's a girl. With Naoto. I don't know yet, so don't spoil it for me.
Yeah, I wasn't going to spoil regardless, but there's more of that with Naoto's, and also as it relates to Kanji's whole thing.
I can see that coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, granted, I can't really offer a ton of perspective on it, given that I'm a white heterosexual man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I could see there is enough given in Persona 4 where it's like depending on where you're coming from with it, I could see there being some stuff. I mean, Kanji's like core of his story has to do a lot with like masculinity.
Yeah.
Even more so, you know, even though he is trying to like figure out, like trying to really wrestle with and understand his own like sexual identity, a lot of it is this like put upon perception of like what it means to be a man, and that's him kind of wrestling through that, and which again is kind of like, depending on where you're coming from, can be good or bad, because you could look at it and be like, yeah that's pretty good, or like if you're coming from it wanting it to dig in more deeply into like homosexual themes, then it could be like, well, you guys didn't do enough. You guys didn't do, yeah. like, you didn't, you could have dug in more. You could have, like, really hit this home, and, like, maybe they didn't do as much. So, I mean, it is a Atlas, the like, developer, publisher, like, you know, they've been criticized for this, and it's difficult to have, like, a huge opinion on what they should do, just given the combination of, like, their Japanese developer, they have a different kind of, like, cultural norms and societal kind of, like, yeah. things leaning on. And also, like, it's difficult to know where their head is on some of these things. And, like, but yeah, I mean, I say all that to say Persona 4 does have more of that kind of stuff going on in it than I think in Persona 5. And yeah. just because so much more of it is front and center. And I don't think there's anything that's, like, bad. It's just, I think that that's kind of the main thing, is, like, they dip their toes into some of these areas where they could be digging in more deeply, potentially, and actually say something, is, I think, where a lot of the concern or a lot of the, like, criticism comes from.
Yeah. There's really just one moment in particular, like the camp out scene when Kanji comes to your tent, that I think they just handle horribly between the male cast. Yep. And in 5, they do have the Yusuke scene where that's pretty bad. But yeah, just 4 just feels so much more front and centered with it. It really comes down to Teddy. A lot of his comments and a lot of things he says and does, where I'm just like, aren't we laying this on, like, really, really thick at this point? Like, I get it.
Yep.
But I mean, that is my only complaint in what so far is a great, great game. Where, again, like I said, it does, I think, tackle the question of, like, really discovering who you are as a person, like, trying to, like, wrestle with the good things about yourself and also the bad things about yourself, and finding, like, that common ground between them. Yep. I think it balances that so well with most of the characters, including Kanji. I just think some of the dialogue around his sexuality is handled really poorly. But all that's to say, it has its hooks in me. I'm deep in. I could be done by this time next week. Who knows?
Look at you. You may. How many hours in are you?
I think I'm at, like, the 50-hour mark.
Okay. You could. I think I finished around, like, 70, 75-ish.
That's what I've seen. So about 75 is.
Yeah. You could. I guess it also depends. You could. I didn't get the epilogue.
Golden ending.
Yeah, I didn't get the golden ending. I mean, again, not to spoil, like, there are specific things similar to, like, if you're familiar with Persona 5 Royal, like, there's some prereqs to kind of trigger that, like, third semester and get into some of that extra content. I didn't get that, but also I wasn't really thinking about that beforehand, and was kind of, like, SOL by the time yeah. I had gotten to the point where I knew about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going for it. I have a little. I'm in September now. I know I need to have it done by November, and I'm sitting here like,
yeah.
I got a long ways to go with one of these. I need to get it going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, man.
Sweet.
I'm thinking, in my mind, big bonus episode of 5 and 4 probably won't happen, but who knows?
Are you saying we need to play through Persona 5 again?
No. I'm saying we've both played through it twice. I've almost played through it 3 full times now.
Because I'll do it. I mean, don't tempt me.
I will do it. Please tempt me. but yeah, I mean, there's just so much to talk about between these two games. I mean, we're talking like 250 hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. So good.
I'd be fun. Yeah, we should.
I have more games to talk about, but I want to hear about what you've been playing first.
Yeah. So I just kind of, like, on a whim was like, you know what? I want to finish. So last week I talked about I played through Resident Evil 2 on a whim, just kind of like trying to prep myself for Resident Evil 7. And got to the end of Leon's playthrough and was like, okay, like, feel happy with this. Maybe I'll come back to Claire's at some point. And then sure enough, I came back to Claire's at some point and played it through in like two sittings. And
look at you.
It was here. Okay. Here's the thing. I left Leon's playthrough and I was like, I really enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. This is good. I finished Claire's and I was like, man, I love this game.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is such a weird thing. So like I played Claire's playthrough and Claire's playthrough. So, I mean, not just Claire's playthrough, but like the second run of Resident Evil 2, like again, Resident Evil 2 structured in a way where it's like, regardless, you have the choice from the outset, pick Leon, pick Claire, you play through theirs. And then whenever you finish it, you have the option to do a second run, quote unquote, with the opposite character. And the second run is structured as kind of like you are essentially almost kind of playing behind yourself in a way.
Okay.
So it was a lot of like, you know, Claire's playthrough skipped effectively like the first couple hours of what, like in the first 5 minutes of Claire's playthrough, I was running into Leon at a point in the story that I wasn't at in Leon's playthrough until I had been playing for like 2 hours. Like,
jeez, okay,
it was very, like, it was. Now, it took me about the same amount of time to finish because there is like extra stuff and there's other things and all that. But like, it's throughout the entire thing, you're finding notes from Leon, where right. He's already been here, and you're essentially like you're playing catch up behind Leon. Stuff gotcha. Is different, but he's already been here. He's already doing these things. It's from the perspective of if okay, you've already done these. You've done these things. This is why you didn't run into Claire because she's right behind you. She's playing catch up, and it was like. On the one hand, like very, it was kind of empowering in a way of like being able to kind of, okay, I know where stuff is. Like I can kind of get a sense for this. But at the same time, it was also like very overwhelming because you get like, there are enemies that like shouldn't pop up that pop up way sooner. Mr. X pops up way sooner.
Hate that.
He is in there very early.
And like that.
That was much more overwhelming. And so it was a thing where it was like, and it was also a balance where it was like, I was going in through Claire's thing. And it was like, I had all of her weapons very early on. I was having to like leave ammo behind and leave other stuff because my pockets were packed full of stuff.
Okay.
So I was having to like leave stuff behind and was having to do a lot more inventory management, was having to like go back to find like, okay, I have no health. I know I left a thing up in this room because I couldn't pick it up. Let me go back and get that really quick. But it's just like, and it's also, it was a different perspective because like Leon's whole story has a very like more Mr. X centered kind of perspective. And you have some of the other stuff, but like Claire's is more centered on who is the actual like primary antagonist, which are like the scientists who have inadvertently like released this virus on the city. And so like she's a lot more tied into that part of the story. And it's not like, I mean, it's Resident Evil. It's not like it's this like big, just incredible Last of Us style prestige thing, but it's like, you know, it's interesting getting those different perspectives going through and having like that different kind of approach. Plus, you know, she has different weapons. She has different, like, it's a different experience, even though you're hitting some of the same areas and you're doing some of the same things. But I got to the end of it and I was like, man, I had a lot of fun with this game. Like, this was good. And it was like, it made me more excited for Resident Evil 4 remake. It made me more excited the potential of playing Resident Evil 8 at some point. I don't think I'm ever going to be excited to play Resident Evil 7. No, I think I'm going to just out of the, like, just being a masochist, but, like, it made me actually excited at the thought of playing Resident Evil 8, which, that's cool. Yeah. But, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Still, super tense. I mean, like, you know, I mean, granted, Mr. X isn't all that scary. Like, I mean, in my head, I was like, oh, he's gonna dive through a wall and he's gonna like crush me in the neck. And it's like, no, he just kind of like stomps through the door like a big old dummy and then like just throws a punch at you. And like, I mean, he's intimidating because you can't really do anything to him, but it's not like he's pulling some weird magic. He's just like, he's coming in and just throwing a big awkward punch at you and then misses. And then you run around him and it's not that bad. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I had fun. It's good. Yeah. Resident Evil 2 remake. Big surprise. Liked it a lot. Very good.
Well, nice. I mean, I'm going to get into it more next week, but I picked up Resident Evil 4 and I have played through the first chapter. I'm a little bit into the second chapter and I'm really enjoying it. And my dog is barking a lot, so I'm going to toss it back to you while I mute my mic just for while he settles down.
The other big thing, again, I'm just pulling surprises out of the air. I, for whatever reason, just was like, you know what I want to play? I want to play Norco, which I had, it was a game that I had downloaded on Game Pass. Like whenever I first got my Xbox, like I just kind of scrolled through the list, skimmed through it and was just like, okay, I'm going to download. Boom, 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 boom. Norco was one of them because I had heard good stuff. It was one of those things where in 2022, people were like, there were like, it was never a GOTY contender in the way that like God of War Ragnarok or Elden Ring was, but you would always have that like, that one-off person who was like, well, this is my game of the year. I love Norco. this was good. And it's a like, it's a weird thing. So it's a point and click adventure game.
Okay.
Set in Norco, Louisiana. And Norco, Louisiana, which I wasn't like super familiar with prior to playing this game, but Norco, Louisiana is set like 20, 25 miles outside of New Orleans, like very close in that proximity, and basically like is so it was once called Sellers, Louisiana. Okay. And essentially it was basically purchased by Shell back in the early 1900s, and Shell established the New Orleans Refining Company, Norco, and eventually just kind of like renamed it the town to Norco. And so like Norco basically is named after big oil, like is basically like a town that is just like,
you do hate to see that
run, like not run by, but is like, you know, this is one of their, I think like one of Shell's biggest oil refineries is stationed here in Norco, and like their entire identity is built around this. Again, could be wrong. This is just kind of like my basic understanding of what I think is kind of happening. And that's kind of how Norco the game is defined, because you're a character named Kay who had left home and was traveling and doing these things, and like you can tell pretty immediately, like it's an alternate United States. Cause there's like for one, they're robots. So that's, you know, that's different, but also too, you know, there's like this, there's the war happening out in like the Southwest, like New Mexico, Nevada area. There's just different stuff going on. Kay returns home when, right after her mother passes away of cancer, and she comes home and she's there, and it's very much like whenever she gets home, she's looking for her brother, who is missing. And so it kind of kickstarts these events of the story of trying to find him and trying, you know, which kind of rolls into, okay, there was a lot more going on with your mom than seemed like, than you really knew about. So you're kind of unraveling this mystery, but you're set in like, there's this kind of constant shadow being cast by this big oil conglomerate and like, all of this poverty and all of these, like, it's very much a Southern Gothic tale,
right,
in the way that like a Flannery O'Connor or somebody like that would tell, where it's very, you know, it's very set in with poverty, with like capitalism, with a lot of this like kind of oppressive tones of like a world that's slowly disappearing, which is effectively is like, from my understanding, is what Norco is in real life, is that Norco is effectively slowly submerging into the ocean. Like, there, it's just the land, because of like hurricanes and because of, you know, the development of like the interstate and just all these kind of things. Like, it's so damaged the soil in a way that it's like, if it's not being flooded, the soil is essentially just kind of being washed away. And so the entire township is effectively going to be underwater at some point. Like, and so you're watching, like, you're playing this game that is very much like a sci-fi thing. Like, there are robots, there's this whole concept of like stowing your consciousness before you die so that it can be like, it can live on in this other way. Okay. And there are all of these, it very much digs into this idea of religion and this idea of like technology in the face of all of this stuff that's happening. But it is also a very human story of all of these people who are like living in this town, who are almost kind of like trapped in this town, but are still existing in this town and doing, like, being humans among what is effectively this big game being played by big oil. Right. And it's, you know, it is a game that like is, it feels like a literary novel in a lot of ways, where it feels like it's saying a lot of things that may just be like right outside of your thinking yeah. threshold, where it's yeah. like, this feels a little over my head, but it's, you know, because it's using a lot of big language and it's using a lot of these overtly religious themes, like it digs into that a lot. And that's kind of one of the core conflicts of it, is like these false religions and all of these like almost, and also just the general idea of religious experience. But it's also just very personal too, of like, you know, because you do play as Kay at points, and you do play as her mom in the past, like as after she's been diagnosed with cancer and she's kind of going through her own stuff. And they're like very human stories that are being told, but it's, you know, using sci-fi and using these things to kind of obfuscate and kind of like to elevate somewhat the overall concept, to kind of like, okay, maybe you don't want to play a game that's just like deep, impoverished rural Louisiana. So we're going to give you a sci-fi game with robots that's yep. in impoverished Louisiana. Yeah. And that's very, you know, and that's very much what it is. And it's very like, you know, again, point and click. It's not for everybody. Like, it doesn't. Now, granted, there's some cool puzzles. Like, I think it uses a lot of really neat, like, just kind of, you know, I mean, not to like dig in and spoil much, but like, you know, there's some cool stuff where it's like, you know, you have your phone throughout the game, and it's like, you know, there'll be this dad who's like, man, I miss my kid. I want my kid to come home. If he could just hear me say that I love him, that would be enough. And you can like use your phone to record a voice memo of him saying that.
Okay.
And then later play it whenever you find his kid, and it will like open up this, like if you didn't store yeah. it on your phone, yeah. or if you accidentally like deleted it at some point, you were like, I'm out of space. I need to delete some, you know, like if you don't have it, you'll just kind of miss that interaction. But it opens up a lot of just like interesting puzzle solutions where it's just like genuine kind of stuff like that that is neat and cool and just like kind of part of that genre. But, you know, it's 5-6 hours. It was,
okay, that's the next question.
Yeah, it's not long. But I don't know. It was, I mean, it was very interesting. Like I was very engaged with it and I wanted to continue seeing where it was going. Like I wouldn't say it was fun, quote unquote, just because like it is like, it's not a whole lot of like laughing, haha. And it's also, you know, has a lot of that. It's very highbrow kind of literary language and stuff. So, I mean, it is an experience in a way, but it's very interesting. There's a lot of just, I mean, cool puzzles, cool stuff. There's even a little bit of like almost kind of like turn-based fighting in it in some spots where it's just kind of like, you know, you roll up on the gas station and the local bully's like, you ain't getting in here. And he's like, oh, you want to bet? And I'll fight him. You know, stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's, I can understand why it gives me big, like in a different way. It reminds me of something like Citizen Sleeper from last year that we played. Obviously it's a very different game, but also in a similar way where it's using this high concept to tell very human stories. So I enjoyed it. Very good. It's on Game Pass. Go play.
Is that the only place it's at?
It's on Steam. It's on Game Pass.
It's on Switch.
I don't think it's on Switch.
Okay.
Let me look. Norco game. My Google skills are unmatched. It's on PlayStation. Yeah, it's on PlayStation. So
I might just check this out. It sounds very up my alley. So
yeah.
5-6 hours as well. I love a nice little bite-sized game. I might check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. How long to beat has Norco at a solid? So if you were, even if you went for the completionist run, Corey, 8 hours.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much.
So yeah, you're good. Tight 6 to 8 hours. You got it.
Sweet. I have also been playing another game. I've been playing Chia.
Chia.
So Chia, and I want to make sure I get this right. Chia is a game developed by Awaseb, however you choose to pronounce that. It is essentially the game, when you open it up, it explains that the president, vice president of this gaming company grew up on this island off the coast of Australia. And this game is inspired a lot by their culture and by their folk tales within off of that island. And so it is a game where you play as the titular character Chia. And you are essentially trying to find your dad, who was taken from you at the beginning of the game. And the gimmick, or the big skill of the game, is that Chia can soul jump, which means she can transfer her body and soul into other animals or other objects. So you can be a bird and you like fly around the world. You can poop on people, be like a dog, dig in a hole, or you can turn into, you can jump into fire. Now you're flame and you can set some of the enemies on fire, so on and so forth. But it is probably one of the coziest games I've ever played. And so in the spirit of Arcade Cozy, I'd give this the Arcade Cozy stamp of cozy approval, because there is almost nothing that beats me riding around on my little raft between these two islands with island music playing, the sun setting. Oh, it's gorgeous, by the way. The graphics are incredible. Yeah. But just like me just bopping my head back and forth, like to these island tunes as I'm just sailing away. I think it does encapsulate some of the ideas that it's bringing in very well, such as like, oh, you want to meet with our village leader? Well, you need to meet. I believe it's the every time I want to say it's like costume, even though that's not what it is. Like the katal. I'm mispronouncing this, but every time I read it, I read it as costume. But it's where you bring these gifts and like these things that you have, like most of the time it's pearls or like these ancient teeth and so on and so forth. These other things that you'll find, you'll bring it to this village leader as a show of respect, as a show that you are coming here in good faith. You have brought these things before him. You're here to speak with honor and to talk amongst equals between you. And so there's like this moment where you go to him and it's like, I need help finding my dad. And he's like, yeah, since this guy's taken over, everything's not been going really well. A lot of people are having a lot of issues. Here's how we can like fix it together. And it's him like showing you different ways. And there's a little bit of combat in the game. It's not really my favorite. It's because it's my favorite is kind of just this big sandbox of how can I get around this game? Do I want to be a bird or do I want to just turn into a rock and fling myself? How do I want to tackle some of these issues with like some of the combat? Like, do I want to just turn into fire and burn them all to the ground? Do I just want to run away? Like, how do I want to go about it? And it's just a fun sandbox. So much of the game, though, revolves around these dance and music sequences where you, as Chia, play your ukulele. And it's a very difficult rhythm game, honestly, on the guitar. I know it's a very almost full-length playable guitar. I think PlayStation posted Chia playing the Last of Us theme this past Sunday. It's like, oh, we can't. Like, but just playing it in the game, but it's like, oh, there's no Last of Us this Sunday. They played something else. I can't remember what it was. But it's very difficult, like many games playing as a guitar. Good thing is you can just hit autoplay and it'll autoplay for you. You can get to just watch the scene. But it's so many of these like cultural tribal dances, and she's playing along, or there's like, it's loosely based on a lot of their folklore, and they've definitely modernized a lot of it because there's like this redneck town where there's like they're all in cowboy gear, and it's like this odd like square dancing thing where you're just playing the ukulele. I'm like, I'm missing something. I'm sure if I researched it a little bit more, there'd be more to it there. But yeah, so much of the game is just revolved around like the everyday life of the island and its inhabitants, and it's Uchiha trying to make it better. And most of that is just like helping out the people. And it's also showing how Chia has been like raised to honor like the people around her, to honor their ways and what's like what's being asked of them, to meet them in the middle there. And I love it. It's, again, talked a little bit earlier with like Persona 4 Golden, like it's just so wholesome. It's so kind. It's trying to do best. Trying to do the best it can as Chia. She's trying to do everything she can for those around her and for herself to help save her father and the inhabitants of this island. And I love it. I love Chia. Super cozy. It's super short as well. There's 6 chapters. I'm at the end of chapter 5. I've only put in like 4 hours into it, maybe 5, but yeah, I love it.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I couldn't remember, or I couldn't remember if I looked up how long it was. I've played about an hour, so far.
Probably like chapter 3.
No, I made it to the big city.
Yeah, you're in chapter 3.
Is that chapter 3?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
you know what you say? It's very short.
Yeah. It's definitely like it is a very beautiful thing, and it's also a game. It is a style of thing, not necessarily in gameplay, but especially in graphics, that I think we will continue to see kind of pop up more over the next few years, because it reminds me of kind of the nostalgic resurgence of like PS2. Like it has a very,
yes.
What if the Simpsons hit and run were prettier is kind of like, like I was running around the city and I was like, man, I was like, these city buildings kind of look like ass, but they're also really pretty. And that was kind of the thing was, it was like, it was the geometric and polygonal style of something from PS2, but it had the modern like lighting techniques and things like that kind of layered on top of it that made it more attractive and made it pretty. And it was like, I mean, it's a very sweet, beautiful game. And I think that is something that I really appreciate. Like the only negative that I've heard about Chia is the fact that you do have some of those combat sequences that are less than,
they're not like, great,
super fun.
The game could really do without them at all, in my opinion.
All of the other stuff where it's the sailing and like all of these experiences of just like really taking in this world, and the fact that they seemed very dedicated to like creating this game as a love letter to its whole, like to their culture,
New Caledonia.
New Caledonia, like they're that whole, like the fact that they are really dedicated to that, it isn't just like somebody like me being like, hey, you know what I saw that was really cool on vacation? New Caledonia, let me make a game about that. It's people who are very engrossed in this culture and who also, I mean, like it starts the game out by being like, hey, just so you know, this is about New Caledonia. Here's who we are. Like here's a little bit about us. And they really dig into that. And it's also a thing where there isn't much that keeps you from just wholeheartedly like enjoying that, because like some of those music sequences, it would be a thing where I'd be playing someone and be like, man, this is a little tough, or I kind of want to watch some of the scenery. And yeah, you just turn on the autoplay and then it plays, and then you just kind of like get to enjoy it instead of it being and there's no stress to it. There's nothing like, oh, you're like having to do these things, or there's a fail state in it. It's just like, we want you to like, if you want to freestyle, you want to play, you want to go really hard on this, do it. If you just want to kind of listen, do it. And it seems like they're very dedicated to, we want people to be more aware of this culture, and we want to tell a story within this culture. And, you know, we want as few barriers to you being able to enjoy that as possible. And that's like, I haven't played a ton yet, but what I have played, I've really enjoyed.
Yeah. And so I have it pulled up here. And so Awakab, or I believe that's how it's pronounced, the studio, its founders, Thierry Bura and Phil Crefo, grew up on New Caledonia. And that's obviously where it inspired. The whole game is either in French or Drieu, which is the native language of the island. There is no English. They wanted to create a game where it reflected how it was like for them growing up and exploring the islands around here. It's one of those things where it's just wonderful to check out. And I think for me, not to be that like token white guy right now who watched Down to Earth with Zac Efron, this showed the Down Under, the Australia one, but they spend time on an island off of the coast of Australia, where they're going into how, like, in a couple, you know, maybe half a century is going to be covered in water due to climate change, and like it's just going to be gone. But he has the native people on the island talk about like what it's like to live there, and like going between that and this, it's wonderful just to see like these cultures being brought to a wider audience, and like they're not going to just, even if, sadly, if like this island goes away in 50 to 100 years, like there's still like remnants of where you can like experience their culture and like see. I don't want to say experience it. I think that's like very limiting down what their culture is. But just still seeing like the love and the inspiration like that has had for it in other ways, through whether it's something like Chia or watching it on like a show where like they're bringing it to the spotlight. I think that's really important, and it's really cool to see like that there's been intentionality behind that to just bring it to the forefront. And yeah, Chia, very good. Check it out.
Love it. Great, great fun. The only other thing that I've kind of played, which I don't want to like dig into too much because I don't have a ton of thoughts on it yet. I played Dredge, a little of Dredge, also about an hour. it just came out this week, March 30th-ish, I want to say. It is an indie game where you play as a... I've had my eye on it for a while because it just seems super neat.
Yeah.
But you play as a fisherman who he ends up like shipwrecking. Like I think he's on his way to take a new job, and he ends up crashing on this island, totals his boat, ends up like staying there and working as the local fisherman to pay off the debt, and kind of gets embroiled. You know, a lot of different townspeople are coming up and they're like, hey, you know, I need some help with this. Like, can you help me build up this part of the island, or can you get me this or whatever? And then you start like the big hook of the game, because you're like the gameplay loop is that you are fishing. You're going out on your boat. You're not running around on foot or anything. The entire gameplay is like driving around in your boat. And you go in your boat and you fish. And you're managing your inventory space a la something like Resident Evil 4, where it's all like Tetris piecing your way to like optimizing your storage. But as you're going through, like you start noticing pretty early on, like, I mean, for one, like the town just seems weird. Like it seems kind of like a Lemony Snicket kind of vibe, where like everybody seems a little kind of like
the art style is very Lemony Snicket.
Yeah, it's very like everybody has this kind of like, you know, they all seem a little like creepy. Whether or not they are.
Did you see Klaus that came out on Netflix, the Christmas movie? Klaus, I guess.
Yeah, Klaus.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Klaus.
Yeah. There's something to that. Like, yeah. The big hook of it, though, is that there's a lot of like Lovecraftian DNA kind of woven in it, because you start the game. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know if Cthulhu himself is in it, but
sign me up.
I mean, maybe, who knows? But like the big thing is, so you start your day at 6 a.m. and you go through, and like as you're doing actions like fishing and driving, time like moves forward. But at 6 p.m., it becomes nighttime, starts getting darker. And at that point, like your fisherman starts to like panic. And the like as you're out on the boat, things start to change, and as your like panic level goes up, like this fog sets in, and you start like, you know, because at least so far stuff is pretty well laid out. It's just like you're not really venturing too far from the island. And so in that experience, like the first couple of times that I went out and it was still night, it's like, I can get back pretty quickly because there's not really anything in my way.
Right.
But it's like I'll be driving and it's like a rock will pop up out of nowhere. Like or like this weird shadow will come through and it'll cut my light. And it's like all of this kind of, it's this weird kind of like weird stuff is happening. Weird stuff like at night stuff is, it really plays with this idea of what panic does to you.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to tell, like, I mean, obviously given some of the stuff, like you find these weird aberration fishes, like you find weird shit. So I mean it is real, like there is real weird stuff, but there's also something to be said of like what happens when we panic.
Yeah,
because like just the idea of, okay, I'm panicking, there wasn't a rock there, holy shit, now there's a rock there, oh my god, like that kind of stuff does seem like is kind of also happening. And so it's a combination feel of like you are stuff is happening below the surface.
Yeah.
And in the nighttime, but also at the same time, like your character is freaking out in this, and so also more weird stuff is happening because of your panic. And it's just, like I said, not too far in, don't have too much experience, but it is very much a thing. Like, I'm interested in seeing, because I mean, you're finding these notes of people who have like had similar experiences, like okay. The previous fisherman left or was killed or something, was not there anymore. You know, there's a creepy lighthouse keeper who has her whole thing. And like, there's this weird, like, eccentric guy on this other island. And there's this, like, you know, ship dock worker guy at another town who, like, really, he gets, like, weird packages shipped to him that, like, whisper at him and also, like, ooze weird things. And he's just like, oh, thanks. Appreciate it.
Are we good?
Like, everybody's, it just has that vibe. Like, it has that Lemony Snicket kind of, like,
a fishing horror
stuff
game.
Is creepy.
Yeah.
It's not horror in the sense that it's scary, but it has that, like, it does have that almost kind of, like, playful Lovecraftian tone where it's, like, there's something creepy adjacent to what's going on in this world, but we may never see it. Like, it does have that vibe where it's like, I don't know that you get to the end of the game and you actually see some big monster. Maybe, but that isn't necessarily the vibe that I get. I get that it's more this kind of like, oh, we don't go out at night because it's who knows what happens in the dark and like
dangerous.
And it's right. Like that is more kind of the central conceit of it is that kind of experience. But yeah, I mean, so far it's like, it's fun. I'm loving the art style. I'm loving the vibe of it. I think it's really cool. I'll have more to talk about it next week.
Same.
I feel like I talked a lot about it, but
yeah, no, I mean, next week, get ready, I guess, for Arcade Creepy next week. Cause I'll be bringing Resident Evil 4. You'll be bringing Dredge and we'll just be a little bit, you know, spooky in April, you know?
Yeah. Nothing better. Corey, do you have anything else to talk about today?
No.
Okay. Well,
no, I don't think so. I'm sitting here thinking, cause I don't want to talk anything about Resi 4. I want to save that. I just want to get farther in as well. See Persona 4 Golden, E3 is dead. That's sad. That's about it though.
Yeah. That was also a thing, which we can talk about more, but it's also not super surprising. I mean, it's just kind of everybody backed out, and then eventually everybody's like, yeah, we're not really feeling this. And then the ESA was just like, okay, well, I guess what's the point in having it anymore if nobody's coming? So
it's one of those things where I think E3 and Summer Games Fest will eventually, like, Summer Game Fest will stop existing just because, like, everyone does their own things now. Then I think you'll see, like, E3 come back in, like, 2020, like, eight or something like that for like this big like reveal weekend, but it's sad. I like the big hype weekend of all the releases.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, and I think there will always be like, I think E3 may, I agree, like, I think they may try to do something in the same way that G4 did, where it's like coming back and trying to like become relevant again. But I think it would also go the same direction as G4, where G4 was shut down after about a year.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, the world just, especially that industry, is different now.
Yep.
And I think E3, like, I think in a similar way to like the pandemic changed work forever to where it's like some places will never be full-time in the office again. I think most of these companies kind of realized, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Why?
Why are we sticking to this like stringent schedule? Like, we always have to have something for this 3-day weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I hope that they do kind of some kind of like unseen force kind of like, you know, gets a hype week in there where they kind of organize it, where she's like, hey, everybody, let's just try to rally together. If you got a trailer, you want to hold it like another month, you know, like
I would love it.
Like I like the fact that there is this kind of like big long week where you can look forward to a lot of that new stuff. I hope that a form of that does return, or that people just kind of generally in the gaming industry do continue to kind of acknowledge that. We're like, okay, first week in June, this is when we're dropping this. It's just kind of, it is what it is. Like, I hope that that kind of continues. But yeah, I would be surprised if E3 as a thing ever became a thing again. That being said, I mean, there still is Tokyo Game Show. Yep. There still is like Game Developers Conference. There still is PAX. Like, there still are conventions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these big, it's not like those are going away. It's just, I think they have different value sets than E3 ever did. So there's still a reason for them to exist,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But that was about it. It's just, it's sad. You hate to see it go.
Yeah. Yeah. Corey, has this been an episode? Is this an episode?
I think this is an episode of the Arcade Cozy. I think it's a solid one as well.
I think it is too.
I like to think it is.
Yeah, Corey, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet?
People can find me on the internet over on my Twitter, Stay Thrashy, or my Instagram, #SlingingThrasher. But most importantly, follow our Twitter page, Arcade_Cozy. Been more active there recently. Plan to continue to be. Been a little bit more active all around, I guess. I don't know if I plan to continue to be all around, but who knows? We'll see. Yeah, that's me. How about you?
Oh, you can find me on Instagram, 4PointPixel on Instagram. Swiss Von Joe in some places.
Yeah.
Not really Twitter, but who knows? Maybe Mastodon one day.
Who knows?
You can find us at Arcade Cozy on Instagram as well, arcadecozy@gmail.com. JohnnyBeGood89 on Instagram. You can find him. He does our intro and outro music. But yeah, Corey, next week, gonna be fun. Looking forward to it. We're only a few weeks out from Tears of the Kingdom. Counting down the days. We're getting there. But until then, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too? Yeah, boy.